And it's so fun to just to learn about something that they really enjoy or have a passion with and say, you want to take it up a notch? And seeing them kind of light up with that idea, go, yeah, I would. You mean I could connect to another classroom? You mean I could go beyond our city limits, beyond our school walls? Yeah, that's possible. It can happen.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Why Distance Learning podcast, where we bring on guests who are intimately and thoroughly and historically involved in the art of delivering educational experiences over live video conferencing. Today's guest is Paul Hieronymus, and because his name is in the title, I can say this. It is the eponymous Hieronymus. That's some wordplay for all of you within the first 30 seconds of our episode today. Paul from Ohio, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, Seth. Thank you very much. It was a very nice way of saying how old I am involved in the technology. I really appreciate that.
I think, hey, if you put the four of us together in all of our experience within distance learning, I mean, we're pushing AARP, right? I think
benefits.
That's the case. Yeah. I'm here as always with Allison and Tammy. How are you all doing today?
Hi, Seth. Doing well. Hello. Yay. Excited to be here.
I'm excited as well. I shaved my face for the first time in 10 years, and I did it because it was my birthday yesterday, and it's going to be like an annual cleanse or something that I'm going to do. Now I remember. I'm like, oh, that's what my face looks like. That's cool. My kids have never seen me without a beard. This is the first time. And I had to like do it in front of them so they didn't freak out. And the dog still knows me. We're all good.
That's a good birthday day of life tradition.
It's like my birthday suit, right? Yeah.
Yes. I also appreciate that you didn't do a surprise. My husband recently did the exact same thing. And it has been over 10 years. I actually don't know if I ever have seen him without facial hair. And we've been together for like 18 years. Yeah. And he just came out, no beard. And my daughter and I were extremely, we were like, what is happening? She never saw him either without a beard.
Okay, enough facial hair. We are here with Paul, who has none. Do you shave every day, Paul? Now I'm still talking about it. Jeez.
Yes, I do. I shave every day, yes.
All right, so you've been on this journey for a while, and also on the journey of being the head of the Ohio Distance Learning Association. Another awesome thing here is that I have never met Allison or Tammy in person, but I have met you in person at last year's Ohio Distance Learning or OETC, the Educational Technology Conference, which was a fantastic conference. Loved getting an inside view on what is going on in Ohio, talking about your experience with the Ohio Distance Learning Association. But first, I'm going to have Allison introduce you.
Okay, yay! We're so excited to have Paul Hieronymus here. So Paul, as we already gave you your wonderful nickname when we came in, but Paul is the chairman of the Ohio Distance Learning Association, which is wonderful. We're so excited to jump into a conversation with you about that. But also, Paul, as well as doing his wonderful work with DLA, we have that Paul is also the Director of Information Technology and Integration for North Ridgeville City Schools. So lots of different information we're interested in being able to unpack there with you, the different things you do for the wonderful teachers and students. And it also is really exciting to say that you've been a really big part of ISTE, the International Society for Technology and Education, both in leading specific groups, as well as helping with the production that goes into the big conference that happens annually. So we're really looking forward to talking to you about your work and also learning about the classroom collaborations that you're able to set up so learners are able to talk to outside experts as well as peer groups. So thanks so much for being here.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here as well. And I enjoy working with all of you in any way we can collaboratively. So. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. One thing I'd love to hear right off the bat is the question that we ask all of our guests about a golden moment. Tell us a story. Tell us a story about a time using this technology where you were just like, wow, this is magical. This is exactly what this is supposed to be meant for.
You know, that's a really tough one because there's several moments. So if you don't mind, do you mind if I share two?
Oh, please.
Okay, great. Well, let's start out with, you know, going way, way, way back. So back in the day when we had, you know, phone lines, ISDN lines, ATM lines, you know, but it was really hard to do this kind of technology. You know, we were lucky enough to find a couple of international collaborations. And I remember us doing a connection with a school in England. And, you know, the kids are, you know, doing the curriculum. They're having a great events that were taking place. And I can't even remember even what the project was, but the piece that reminded me the most was actually when it was wrapped up and about done. So we got through all the curriculum, we're getting ready for the bell to change, but we decided just not to disconnect and just let the kids kind of run up and ask questions. And they were all just, you know, hey, where do you live? What kind of house do you have? Do you like this kind of shoe? Do you like this kind of show? And, you know, the communication was going back with them. But the most powerful moment from it though, was when we did disconnect, just hearing the kids as we were walking out, saying things like, you know, they were just like us. We're like, yeah, that's it. Exactly. They are just like you. And as the more we would do those kind of connections, the more they would start to realize that. And that was a really important piece for us. The other experience though, that we had is we're lucky enough to pull in an author, Lauren Tarnish. You know, she's the author of the I Survived series of books. And we contacted her and, we were thrilled that she was interested in doing a video conference with several of our schools. And we explained it, you know, to her that we really didn't want it to be in a webinar format. We really wanted it to be so that the kids could have a true experience, not just seeing something just being kind of broadcast to them. So as we talked through this, we had the kids all create questions. And, you know, they did send them to her ahead of time, but the important part was that we narrowed it down to just a few schools so multiple kids could have an opportunity to come up and ask their question. And when they did ask that question, we were expecting her to give a question back so that the kids could, you know, because many times our kids are shy and they just kind of walk up and say their question or read it down at their chin and race away from the camera. And with this experience, the kids would come up and they'd ask a question. We would explain to them, you know, kids, you need to make sure you keep eye contact. Look into her eyes. Talk to her as you're asking these questions. And when the kids did that and she responded back, they almost looked a tad bit shocked. But it was just a meaningful piece for them, knowing that she was answering the questions to them, not just to the whole audience. And what was great about it was she would actually respond back with their names. And the kids just had that ownership to it that was so powerful. And the kids, many of the kids expressed how that was one of the highlights of the year for them, to actually be able to meet an author that they just love to read books from, but to actually have that personal experience with her. And it was just so powerful for them. We really enjoyed that. And she enjoyed it as well, because at first she was thinking of, you know, how can I reach as many groups as I could? But then just to understand that that personal touch was a really neat piece.
It speaks so beautifully to the profound connections that can occur between people using this medium outside of their geographic bubble. To be able to connect with students internationally. Fantastic stories. Thank you. Thank you so much. On the flip side, you know, there are challenges to this medium. What are some of the persistent challenges that you've sought to work through, and what are some solutions that you've had, and maybe even what are some challenges that you're still experiencing today with the medium?
Yeah, I think what we see across the board is, you know, that unwillingness to be in front of the camera. People are just, oh my gosh, I don't look right. I don't feel comfortable in front of the camera. And then when it happens, they usually kind of get through it. And it's really just kind of getting the person to take that time. I think you also notice a lot of times, like I do a lot of webinar kind of, you know, from salesmen. And I'm really irritating. I just sit there and kind of say, well, can you turn your camera on? And they're like, oh, I don't want to turn my camera. No, you should turn your camera on. You know, that's one of the things that I think is so powerful about this medium, is being able to read the facial expressions of the people that you're talking to. I mean, how does he know that I'm even paying attention to what they're saying to me? I could be off, you know, turned to the side, working on my laptop, knocking out emails, putting in my time because I said I would give, you know, this person a few minutes of my time. It's the same thing with teachers and kids. They really need to have the experience of talking to people. And that's what's, and we don't have time in our curriculum to teach that. So by tying that into our curriculum pieces, it makes a powerful part for us to have our kids making eye contact, speaking clearly, and listening to what is being said before they start answering statements. And so that, but that challenge is just getting over that hump to do it. And once you get a couple of questions in, they can do it. With our teachers, we've always found that getting them to try little things and then holding their hands at first. You know, the technology has become so much easier over the years where we've gotten to that point where we do the first connection with our teachers. And before we're halfway through, they're going, you can go now. Or they'll even say, come back at the end of the day and take this thing out of here. That's, we're thrilled that we get to that level with our teachers. We're really excited that that happens. But again, that's because the technology has become so much easier. So that's a kind of just getting that first step in there is always the hardest.
Absolutely. What a blessing to have the technological hurdles have really just kind of fallen by the wayside in the especially in the past few years, especially in the context of the pandemic. I think that the reticence to be on camera is real. Something that I've actually coached some like business leaders on best practices for virtual meetings. And one of the things that I hear over and over again is that people don't want to be on camera. And there are some issues there for people in terms of equality and make safe spaces and making sure that like people feel like the virtual space is a safe space for them at work. But what I coach people on, what I tell them is when you're in that situation where you want someone to turn on the camera, maybe they don't want to, maybe they're reluctant, is to give them the why behind it. Right? Like talk about why it's important to be able to do all those things that you just described, right? Really, really connect with the people because you can see their facial expression. You can read their body language. And a lot of people believe that, oh, it's on a screen. So you're not getting a lot of that stuff. You're not getting the nonverbal communication. I say, you haven't trained your eye, right? Because it's all there, right? Like right now, I've got notes on my screen. So you guys are actually pretty small, but like I've like done this for so long that like I'm getting everything, right? Like 90% of the nonverbal communication that I would get if I was in the room with you, I'm getting just by the fact that like I've trained my eye to be very, very sensitive to this medium, to finding the information that I need in this two-dimensional space. So I think that's very astute to remark upon that.
Yeah, I think it's really important with the video on, because there's always, in some cases, there's just like awkwardness, if you will, within any person. And especially as you're an individual that's growing, a student, even if it's a teacher, you're using a new medium, you're in maybe a new classroom or your earlier years of teaching, that can be something that causes that technological, that fear of technology. All of a sudden, you don't know how to get to Google. You're definitely not trying to be on camera for whatever reason. But it also, I think what you said that really struck me is the idea that the students have to learn that, right? Whether that's in person or virtual, this is an important element that's now ingrained into how individuals will connect, whether it's personally, professionally, scholastically. Being able to gain those skill sets and understand how you speak to somebody isn't like your friend that you might be hanging out with on FaceTime, playing games or maybe doing homework, hopefully doing homework. It's just a little different. And that skill set is so necessary, especially now, is just really exciting. And then to the idea of how we connect. So when we have this one-to-one experience where we can see everyone's face, that idea of the trepidation when you're in that one classroom and it's, just the content provider on one end and the class, you're still as aware as who's not answered, who's a little bit more nervous. So thinking about the idea of, just those small keys of saying the students' names or asking their names just to start, I think is really beautiful for the content providers as well to be mindful of. And kind of a little bit of social and emotional learning, thinking about how that comes into your conversation.
Yeah, in fact, can I throw a little plug out here real quick? I was, yes. So I was lucky enough to go to USDOA in Orlando, Florida. I was thrilled to be there. And one of the things I was really surprised about, there was an author there by the name of John Chen, and he makes a book called Engaging Virtual Meetings. And it was so cool that I got to meet him and I won his book. So I'm really excited about that. So I want to put that plug out there for him because I have been reading it. Because again, you know, you think you know a lot about a about anything, and then you start learning more about it. And you're like, okay, now I guess I am that small fish in the pond again, which I love. But one of the things that he shared that I thought was, it just caught me off guard, was he actually had studies that said that sales increased from people doing virtual communications by showing their hands, making sure that they are that their hands are in the screen, which I never would have thought was something that would be, you know, a factor in that. Just one little tip that he had out of there. It's a really neat book. If anyone is looking for something how to step up your game when you're doing virtual meetings, it's a really nice, good read. I'm trying to recommend it.
Yeah.
Oh, great. We can put the link into the show notes too, so that people are able to find the book. Thanks for that pro tip.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. Great plug. And I love that idea because it humanizes, it takes one more step towards humanizing you, right? It's like even a yet another body part I can see. I do want to talk about the Ohio Distance Learning Association. So this is something you're deeply involved in. How long, can you give us some of the history around it, right? So like, how long has it been around? Why were people compelled to start this chapter? You know, Allison was saying before we did this recording that the Distance Learning Association around Pennsylvania is actually like a multi-state operation. But Ohio has one that's just for Ohio. So, you know, we kind of want to check in here. Like, what is the state of distance learning in Ohio? And can you illustrate that by talking about the Ohio Distance Learning Association?
You bet. And it's my honor to be the chair for the Ohio Distance Learning Association. I have been involved for a minute since the very beginning. So we'll give you a little bit of a history lesson. If that doesn't bore you too much, if I see a nod off, I'll speed things up. But, back in 1997, our state started to look at telecommunity as a tool for providing an enhancement to the curriculum. And this was, again, back in the day when it was hard. ISDN lines were where it started. We then moved into what we called ATM, asynchronous transfer mode, which had its share of headaches and challenges to it. And what was funny is, you know, I remember somebody who was one of the early pioneers of this program saying it was like being the first person in your neighborhood with a phone. You know, you can do something with it, but you weren't quite sure who to talk to. And so it was a really neat concept. That was when it first got launched. And so then in 1998, the state then threw additional money in to form grants for pockets around the state of Ohio to form collaborative groups around interactive video. So in order to get the grant to receive the extremely expensive equipment at the time, you had to have a consortium of multiple schools that were going to work together collaboratively. And so across the state of Ohio, we had huge groups of interest, you know, groups that were just trying to work collaboratively to get distance learning off and running. Some were doing collaborative projects, some were doing shared courses, some were just trying to do international connections. You name it, people are coming up with great ideas. And then as that funding started to disappear, a lot of those groups also faded away. But what was really neat was that there was a pocket of people who kept their consortiums around. And they were still active way after the funding had been taken away, because they're just people just found practical, strong uses for it and you know, use cases and kept running with it. Well, after several years of just working as just kind of the video conferencing group, you know, we didn't have a name, we didn't have anything with it. We were just a group of people who kind of all worked together, and we had ties to our state technology conference, and we had ties to our local government, but no one really had no identity that was really tied around us. And so we ran into USDOA, and we thought, you know what, maybe we should create ourselves as a state chapter. So we went ahead and put in our application back in 2011. And we're thrilled that we were able to you know, we receive our state chapter, and we've just been running ever since. It's given us that level of credibility that I think is really important for our organization. Our State Department recognizes us a little more than just a bunch of cool people who like video. It kind of sounds kind of weird, but it really kind of put some legitimacy to our organization, and we have just been growing ever since. And so as we started to look at this, we started to say, well, you know, what's the important piece for us? I mean, obviously we have, you know, funds that we have to send to USDOA to be our affiliation to that. But really what we're all about is just enhancing student learning. And so we looked at our model for our membership and said, you know, we've got our museums and they do wonderful stuff. We love every one of them. We created a tier for that kind of a group. But then we also then said, let's look at a tier that would just really push to get it into classrooms. So we went ahead and we created a tier of our membership for college consortium level. And all of our internet service providing, you know, all of our ITCs in Ohio joined as that group. And as we did that, we said, well, let's extend that membership. So what we set up was that if you are a consortium member, all of your members can be members of Ohio DOA. And so with all of our ITCs joining, we technically can say, and I have to say technically, that every school in Ohio is a member of Ohio DOA. Now, got to be honest, you walk up to someone and go, hey, your school is a member of Ohio DOA. They go, who? Because we're still working on that piece and getting better all the time. But we never have to turn away an Ohio school. And that's for any project that we run. And we just take so much pride in that. We love to have that piece in together.
Oh, that's amazing. So you kind of alluded to it here, right? For a little bit where you were like, you ask any given school, they may not know about Ohio DLA, right? And we here we are, the four of us, obviously huge proponents of this. We've spent much of our careers working in this medium. We recognize and see all of the great values of this medium, yet not everybody does. And I'm wondering if you can speak to maybe some people that you've run across where you're like, no, that's just not for me, and why it wasn't for them, or maybe some people that you've been able to convert into being believers. If I can pile a third question on that, just like your take on like, you know, why not? Like, why isn't this a bigger deal?
Okay, so so prior to COVID, you know, it was a piece that was considered really hard. It was a piece that people really didn't have an understanding of and awareness. They, you know, didn't believe it could even work. Then of course, you know, COVID hits and everyone's forced into it, and you get everybody just kind of having an awareness of the technology. And I don't think there's anybody who thinks it's just going to go away. I think just people are there, but there are people though, unfortunately, who maybe didn't have good experiences with it and don't want to journey back that way. Or they think that if they even incorporate it a little bit, that they're going to be back at home and back all the kids back at home and force that from happening, which is a ludicrous concept as well. And they're still just right now, we're starting really kind of battling that whole concept of, well, now post pandemic, where does these powerful resources fit into the curriculum? And we have then back again, starting again, showing the importance of how content providers, museums, Hall of Fames, you know, different, you know, federal government organizations, our national parks provide enhancement to our curriculum. And as they start to see those pieces, those light bulbs start to come back on again. And go, oh, yeah, that's a resource I could do. And they start to slowly come back again to that those pieces. But again, we have to find the tools that make sense to them. Expecting people to come to us is just not a reality. We have to just find things that we just got to find people and say, you know, what kind of things you're working on? Oh, here's how we can enhance that. Here's how we can make that even better. In our school district, I've got a fantastic group of teachers that I work with. And it's so fun to learn about something that they really enjoy or have a passion with and say, you want to take it up a notch? And seeing them kind of light up with that idea, go, yeah, I would. You mean I could connect to another classroom? You mean I could go beyond our city limits, beyond our school walls? Yeah, that's possible. It could happen. And so it's fun to that. Now, there's always going to be those that are, you know, the hostages of technology that they're not going to, getting them to do it is like throwing a cat down a well. It's just not going to happen. You know, and with those people, you just move forward and keep going. And they'll eventually see the success from the people around them. And maybe one of them will circle back and say, all right, I'll give this a shot. What do you got for this technology? What do you got for this curriculum piece? And that's really what we do spend a lot of time on, because with our teachers, it's so important. Time is everything. We can find, you had the most expensive resource out in the world. If I'm doing a free program and it's a waste of your time, that's more of a loss to us than spending money on a program or spending money on technology. So it's got to be something that matches what they're doing. It's got to be something that is going to enhance the curriculum, or we're just spinning wheels.
Yeah. And can I press you on that for a moment? Like, how do you have those conversations with schools, right? Because you can't possibly talk to every school, or do you?
No, unfortunately, we can't. And it's just good things are contagious, and school teachers talk to teachers, and those are important things that we try to have happen. Our state technology conference is a critical place for us, because we get teachers and we talk to people, and especially when you can talk to somebody about the technology when somebody's walking by that has done it. They go, yeah, that was awesome. You can't get enough of. You love those. And so it's just slowly just building those building blocks and just having successful events, just keep building, and the good news spreads.
So I'm hearing a little bit of like trial and error, a little bit of ear to the ground, and a lot of quality control, making sure that what comes through the door is actually good, so that people talk about it and spread the word. I also really love the idea of a slogan for the entire industry being distance learning, want to take it up a notch.
Yes.
I love that.
That I just was like, I was just about to say the want to take it up a notch, it's like magic maker in my mind. Like that would immediately be what I would think. Like magic maker. Yes, of course. Like, let's do this. Like, let's jump as much as we can. I do wonder, especially just thinking about the idea of the classroom, the teachers who you work with, and the reach that you have. Have you just, especially with the after the pandemic, have you seen any type of movement towards more of a virtual schooling experience for student learners, whether that's through virtual academies or if you're seeing an uptick in more homeschooling? I just wonder, since you get to work with such an eclectic group of educators.
You know, what I think we're seeing more is that people are looking at it as a problem-solving tool for all their needs, where it's a tool for having snow, not having snow days, as a tool for parent-teacher conferences. I mean, that is, for me, huge ones for our, we're seeing an uptick in even IEP meetings. I was shocked when I talked to my student services department to find out that over half of their IEP meetings are done virtually now, because it's so much more convenient for the parents to be able to connect in and still have that face-to-face communication with the people they need to have. And so we see those kind of as solutions. So more of the hybrid we have seen happening, although my school district, we have courses that are being offered solely through interactive video. So we have American Sign Language and Mandarin Chinese being taught every day virtually. And we're really proud of the way that those programs have gone for us. We're really excited that we're able to do it. And we hope to, in the future, be able to see an expansion of those type of programs. I'm hoping personally as a school district to see us being a deliverer of content. Right now, we're just receiver. We're just taking it all. And I would love to see us take that next step where we're actually providing the virtual instructor, because as we start to think about we have a teacher shortage that's taking place right now. It's hard to find educators. And there are pockets throughout our state where it's even harder than it is for us. And if I have a classroom teacher who's got a master's plus whatever, and they're teaching four periods, and then they're spending that time in a study hall, gosh, if there's a way I could get that teacher to be doing what their passion is, what they do best, providing that to even to another school. That is very, very powerful. We'd love to see those kind of things happen more as we move forward. So that's where I'm kind of seeing things. Not as much as people using it as an alternative, but just using it as an enhancement.
That's really interesting. And I also wonder, just since you mentioned about the teacher shortage, when you're using the virtual field trips, are there certain content providers that you go to knowing they're going to fill some type of gap or, you know, act as kind of a bridge if you're still seeking personnel in those specific positions? Or how do they come in as a tool for you, I guess, in helping the kids stay where they need to be in their curricular unit?
Well, I'm proud to say that in Ohio, we have I'm sorry, I'm going to just stick my chest out and just drag a little bit.
Yeah, do it.
I feel we have some of the best content providers, bar none, across the country. Whether it's the Cleveland Museum of Natural History, the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the Cincinnati Museum Center, the Ohio History Center. Even the Federal Reserve of Cleveland, with the Federal Bank, we just having these amazing content providers in Ohio is just so exciting. But then also going beyond that to like our national parks, there are kids who may, even in North Ridgeville, may not ever get to see Lake Erie, which blows my mind. It's 10 minutes down the road, and you may be a kid who never gets to see Lake Erie.
Downright
but yet,
Erie.
He's not going to do that. He's not going to see the Grand Canyon. He's not going to see Washington, D.C. He's not going to see the Badlands. And knowing that you can connect to those national parks and being able to have them share their resources to our kids is just amazing. We had a really exciting program we did earlier. We have our kids do a trip to Washington, D.C. Not all the kids can go. Some of them, they just can't go because their parents don't want them to go. Some of them just didn't earn the right to be able to go. It's, that's how that happens sometimes. But should they not have any, have no experience at all? We were lucky enough to be able to pull together content providers from the national parks, the Spy Museum, the National Archives, and to be able to provide a whole day of period after period of virtual experience for our kids, for them to be able to have an opportunity to learn about Washington, D.C. And it was an amazing thing for all of us. And our teachers, after we're done, was like, wow, this is some great stuff. I'm like, yeah, here you go. They're going to be doing more sessions now because of that.
That is so exciting and so inspiring. Oh my goodness. Especially just having been a content provider, it's always sad to hear about the students that just aren't able to get there for whatever reason. They're just not able to make it. And being able to provide that virtually was always a dream. Like, it could never happen the way that where I was at the time I was seeking that, but it's great to hear how you made that model possible. Oh my goodness, for the teachers, the learners, and also the community, your community within the schools, that they all have this specific experience that they're able to connect on, whether it was virtual or in person, just is a really opens up an opportunity for special bonds.
Yeah, but it's so important though that the teachers understand that it's not a virtual tour. It's not just snapshots. It's right. Not just someone walking around with a camera going, okay, here's this painting, here's that painting. Yeah. They're interacting and they're engaging with them. There are times that I actually have sat through some of the Cleveland Museum of Art programs going, oh my gosh, I never would have grasped any of this if I were physically there. I mean, they're zooming in on parts of the painting and saying, what do you think the angels are talking about? I'm like, the angels? I didn't even know they were even there. Look at this. This is so good.
I'm still looking at the bottom of the hill here. Yeah. Like, yeah.
The angels are always there.
I know. Especially in certain artworks.
But it's just that powerful piece of having the engagement of it. Because you think about when the kids are actually taking a physical trip to the museum, half the time they're screwing around with their partners and their friends. They're wandering around. They're looking at something else. You lose an hour on the bus there, an hour on the bus back. I can connect in my bell schedule time. And then when that bell goes, they're gone and we are right back to business. I mean, how efficient is that? It's great.
Awesome. So I think you just answered our titular question, which is why distance learning? But I mean, you definitely illustrated it. I will say that much. But let's toss it to you anyway. Why distance learning? Why does this medium have value?
Because we just have a limit to what our resources are around our facilities. When we start bringing in interactive video, we can do anything. We can go ahead and connect to a museum and have them pull resources that we just dream of being able to have access to. Being able to pull out a dinosaur bone, that's not happening in my classroom. Being able to go outside and walk in the park, not happening. We can't do those kind of things. So having those kind of resources available to us and the experts behind them within just a couple of emails, maybe even a PO, depending on who we're talking to, and being able to, you know, provide an experience that our kids will remember forever. I always think back, you know, for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You could talk about forces of motion, but what better way to see force and motion than football? I mean, they always show clips from the NFL to explain their thought process, their theories. And seeing somebody jumping over another human being, that isn't happening in North Mitchell classrooms, I'm telling you.
I mean, maybe it is, but it's not supposed to be.
Yeah.
Okay. If it is, we're going to hopefully find that kid. But just, the kids just seeing their reactions from that is priceless.
Ah, beautiful. Wonderful answer. Amazing guest. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing not only your knowledge, but your passion for what we do. People who want to check out some of the things that Paul mentioned can look in the show notes. Laura Tardish, I think, from the I Survive books, we'll have that link in there. In addition to John Chen, his book on engaging virtual meetings. If you would like to support the podcast, the best way to do that is to give us a rating or even a review. I think a 5-star rating. That's what I think. That's what I would go with.
5 stars.
And remember that if you want to know the answer to the question, why distance learning, just check out the people we highlight on this podcast. These are the people who are leveraging this amazing technology to truly transform the learning experience. Why distance learning? Because it is nothing but awesome. See you next time.